You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms and the new 110 Ultralight. At about 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 action. The carbon fiber wrapped stainless steel barrel makes it durable and lightweight. The rifle comes equipped with the Savage AccuFit technology, so that means it's adjustable and it comes in a variety of calibers. The 308, the 270, the 28 Nosler, the 280 Ackley Improved, the 30-06, and much more. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
This is the Houndsman XP Podcast.
Good dog, get that bird. Get that bird in here.
The original podcast for the complete Houndsman. The podcast that represents our lifestyle of extreme performance.
Get up there! Get him! Get him! Yeah! Good boy!
Good boy, Ranger!
Uniting houndsmen across the globe, from east to west, north to south.
You know, if you're going to catch a cat or a lion, you know, you have to have teamwork.
We take you to the wildest places on earth.
Yeah, so how many days a week do you spend out there?
As much as I can, to be honest with you. Anytime that I get, I'm out there.
Join us for every heart-pounding adventure on Houndsman XP.
I'll tell you like I tell everyone else, I'm going to hunt whether you're here or not, so you might as well be here.
Houndsman XP fans, you've been asking for an episode about beagles and hunting rabbits and hares with beagles, and I traveled to northern Michigan to the UP up north and hunted with the man, the myth, the legend, the Ayatollah of rock and rolla, Allen Gingrich. We spent 2 days in the UP hunting hares, and I can see why you guys wanted an episode about this. I probably haven't been on a hound adventure where I was so relaxed and had such a good time in a long, long time. Alan is a great host. Nothing fancy, but we had campfires. We had all the fixings, hot dogs, and some action-packed beagle races on snowshoe hare. It was a great time. You're going to hear about Alan's journey in beagles and his passion for chasing hares with these beagle hounds. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. It's just a fun conversation with a great guy, and I really enjoyed my time with Alan, and I think you'll enjoy it too. Hey, if you guys have not seen dogsaretreed.com, if you haven't seen the new items on their website, you need to check them out. Kevin and Nancy have reinvented an old idea and made some really good improvements with their leashes and their, I'm not sure what they call them. I call them a gang line tie out, but I think they advertise them as a travel tie out or something like that. But you know what I mean? It's a long line. It's got several clips on it, and you can hook your hounds in it. Drive a stake on each end, tie your dogs out on one long line. Check these things out. They're not your standard item that you've been seeing around. Talking about triple crimps on the cable connectors, and then everything is shrink wrapped, so there's no more exposed cable there to rust, to break down. And they've improved the loops on the end of their leashes, and you can get them in two kinds of snaps. One, the standard brass bolt snap, and then the other stainless style snap that is a little quicker hookup when you're hooking hounds up to it. So check them out at dogsaretreed.com. You can also find Paws Are Protected there. They are the creators of Paws Are Protected. Build your pack from the ground up with Paws Are Protected. This stuff is an ointment that you apply to dogs' feet. It will soften the pad, regenerate cell growth, helps heal injuries, existing injuries, gets those pad backs in shape faster for your hounds, and that means more days hunting. So good for you, good for your dogs. Build your pack from the ground up with Paws Are Protected. My son is actually a machinist. He uses a lot of acetones and different things. He's using this on his hands, and just after a few applications, about a week, he can't believe it. I can't believe it. So Paws Are Protected. And you can use a discount code. We've got a really cool discount code for you. When you join us on Patreon, we will send you a code where you can get 20% off of everything at dogsaretreed.com. So check them out today. You can join us on Patreon. Go to the Houndsman XP website at houndsmanxp.com. Find the link on how to support this podcast. Guys, I can't tell you how much we appreciate every one of our Patreon members. And every month we do a monthly drawing. We're giving prize packages away. We're giving away a Tumblr when you sign up. And Patreon is how we support this podcast. We bring you a lot of information, high quality stuff. We're out there trying to get the topics that you want to hear, that are relevant to your lifestyle, and bring them to you. And we appreciate your support. You can support us for as little as $1 per show. You can always listen to Houndsman XP for free, but Patreon is a way that you can support this podcast so that we can continue to talk and bring you great topics about training, showcasing individual houndsmen, and important issues that are coming up that affect our lifestyle. So join us on Patreon. Go to houndsmanxp.com and click on the support button, and it will take you into our Patreon page, and you can start supporting us, and we would greatly appreciate it. Your support keeps us rocking this podcast and still leaves me with a little bit of money for another can of Spam and maybe some new crochet needles for the missus. So, hey, we really do appreciate you. I hope you enjoy this episode as much as I enjoyed making it and bringing it to you at Houndsman XP.
Man, isn't this just pretty right through here? I love this.
This is, yeah. First time I've ever been up here to the Upper Peninsula. It's pretty impressive. It's pretty impressive, and we're getting ready. We're coming back from a couple days of hare hunting with your beagles. And
yeah. Good couple days, too.
Yeah. Is a lot of fun. Oh, you gotta pay the admission fee before you go across the bridge on this side.
Yep, they get you on the northern side.
Oh, okay. Here's the admission fee right here.
Perfect.
I thought they only charged you when you came up north, when you came to the UP, and then they were glad to see you go.
They get you both ways.
I got a piece of smoked fish caught between my teeth.
Yeah, so do I, actually. I was thinking I needed a toothpick here. We got in the wrong one. That's my buddy over there on that one.
Oh, yeah?
No, that's not him either. It's a native guy.
Yeah.
Always a happy guy. How are you, ma'am?
Good, thank you.
Thank you. You too.
You're going to drag race the E450 right here.
Perfect.
You got him.
We got
his him. Hood's up. He probably doesn't even realize it. His hood's like on safety latch right there. Yep. So we're getting, what's the name of this bridge? Is this the Mackinac?
This is the Mackinac Bridge, yep.
Going across the river, and unfortunately we're headed south instead of headed north.
Well, that's true. At least it's not as windy as it was Wednesday morning when
we came
up here. Oh my
gosh. So how long did we sit and wait to get across the bridge because of the wind?
We got here at what? I think it was around 6:30 when we got on the south end of it. And we finally did cross at what? Right at 11:30 noon?
Yeah.
I think something like that on that day. Yeah, we sat around for a little while, went and ate some breakfast, and it still wasn't open. So we turned around, went back to Gaylord, went to Jay's Sporting Goods, loafed around there, ate some more donuts.
I didn't need that donut, by the way.
I didn't either.
It was like a chocolate Long John with peanut butter filling. You got to try that one next time.
That was the heaviest Long John I have ever eaten in my life. That thing had to weigh at least a pound.
Yeah. And then we just kind of had to make ourselves go walk and stuff once we get up here.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no escorts today going back. Had an escort bringing us across Wednesday.
Yeah.
What were the winds on Wednesday? You remember what they said?
Well, the Michigan DOT site showed, what'd it say, 60 miles an hour on the bridge surface?
I think that's right, something like that.
Yeah, 60 miles an hour, but it was like 45 to 50 miles an hour sustained with 70 mile an hour gusts.
Yeah, it was windy, that's for sure.
Yeah, yep. And I'll tell you what, when we came across the lake Wednesday, it was heavy seas. It really was.
It was.
It was heavy seas. We had a due west wind coming. And so we're driving south now, and I'm looking out to the west. And I don't even know where the other shore is.
Yeah, can't see it from that side. Over here on the east, I can see some, there's a part of it that opens up where you can't see anything, but I can see part of the, that's not the Mackinac Island. The Mackinac Island sits behind us there a little bit. You can see some of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a place you got to take your wife to sometime. I bet she'd like that.
She is really looking forward to that. I've never been. This is my first trip to the UP.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
I was really impressed. I was impressed with the quality of the hunting. And how long you been coming up here?
A lot of years. Yeah.
You don't want to date yourself.
I'm not going to do that. But I'm an older guy. And I've been coming up.
Well, then what does that make me?
Well, it makes you just like me. I figured out you're the same age as I am. I may have a couple months on you, actually.
Yeah.
But, no, I've been coming up here regularly since I was about 20 years old.
Man, so 30 years.
Let the cat out of the bag. You did.
31 years, to be exact, next month, right?
Actually, 32 years.
Next month?
Let's not shortcut it since we're exposing it anyways. Yeah. And you know what? This is the first time that I have ever been that we couldn't cross the bridge because of wind. First time I've ever seen that happen.
Remember that guy we met down here at the restaurant yesterday? And he's like, oh, yeah, I've been through this several times.
Yeah.
I've been coming up here for 40 years.
Yeah.
And then he's like, this is the second time it happened. It's like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I've been through this several times. Yeah. It happened one other time.
Yeah.
That's not several.
Yeah.
I can tell you, Alan, that the last couple days have been it beyond my expectations. I mean, I was excited about coming up and going to the UP and chasing hares, snowshoe hare with you and your beagles. I've heard you talk about it for years. And I've always thought, man, that'd be cool to do. That'd be so much fun. It'd be different. And it didn't disappoint. So I can't tell you how happy I am and grateful that you invited me to come up and tag along for a couple days.
Yeah, well, for sure. I appreciated that you could make it work to make the trip up here with me. I've come up here quite a bit just by myself, you know, and with other folks too, my brothers and all that, and it's always good to have somebody with you, really. You know, I enjoy just coming up here and running dogs, and it's just a good place to get some miles on your dogs. And, you know, right now I got these two young males. I'm trying to get a lot of time on them, and it's just, you know, it's a 5.5-hour trip from my house, so I love coming up here. And just even if it's just for, like, this trip, just a day and a half, basically, we're going to make it 2 days, and When you know, Wednesday was it got so windy and everything. We didn't get the dogs loose till about what was it, about 1 o'clock maybe.
Yeah,
and
we still put 13 miles on those little beagles.
Yeah, we did, and but yeah, it was a good time. You know, that hunt mostly on the Hiawatha National Forest there, and it's not too far. You know, 20-25 minutes you can be in the forest. Across the bridge there, but yeah, it's just it's huge, a vast forest there. You know, I looked it up. I didn't know exactly how many acres it was till today. I looked it up, but it's 870,000 acres. You know, that's
impressive.
Acres. Yeah. What did it say? 575 miles of streams that dump into the Great Lakes around here.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It is.
It's amazing. And the thing that surprised me was the lack of traffic. You know, we're in the fall, and being in the forest for a day and a half or 2 days or whatever, we see four vehicles.
Maybe, yeah.
Four vehicles pass us.
Yeah.
And what a gem.
Yeah.
It's a gem.
Yeah. You see why I like going up there?
Absolutely. Yeah, it's your happy place.
It is my happy place. Sure is.
You look a little sad because we're headed south.
It is. You know, it's, you know, all, like I said, all good things must come to an end, you know, but, get back home and get to work again, I guess. But no, I really enjoy the last couple of days. Always do. Doesn't matter. You know, Wednesday, I thought the running just wasn't that great. It just seemed like the conditions weren't as good. But then this morning, we turned loose. It took a little while to get on a hare. That was a little uncommon. It usually doesn't take that long to get one jump, but it took a little while. But when they did, they really ran good from the start. And most of the day, it's been good, you know?
Yep.
I got some tired beagles. They're all snoring in the box right now.
They
put
about, what'd they put, 15, 16 miles on today?
Yeah, about right. They averaged about 15 miles we put on them today. So.
There's just something about a beagle. You
know? That was up to what time we quit, about 2 o'clock, 1:30, I guess, 2 o'clock, something like that.
Yep.
A little sooner than I thought, but after we after you knocked that last hare down, I saw, boy, these young dogs are looking a little tired.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I made two amazing shots.
You did. I was impressed. You two for two, man. I did. Hey, I got a couple of hairs, too. And
you missed one.
There's one that got away. There's one that got away from me.
He was just hopping, like, down the road towards you and looking at you and waving at you. And you just – no, I didn't see it. What happened?
I'm not going to tell you how close he was. He was well within shooting range. I just let him a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Let him a little too much. Wouldn't be the first time. Won't be the last.
Oh. Well.
What'd you think of that color change this year? So you saw them. They're about, I'd say, about three-quarter white right now?
Yeah. I mean, when I just got back from Idaho and we saw a lot of snowshoe hair out west and stuff like that, and they were all still brown, and so right now they're in that transition stage of going from brown to white, which is absolutely amazing that a hare adapts to its environment like that. There isn't any snow here yet; it's still brown.
Yeah,
but
and that's actually unusual for this time of the year. Oftentimes, this time of the year we come up here, there's usually snow here, so.
Yeah, and the hare know that, and they're already starting to change colors.
Oh,
but
yeah.
It's a good thing there isn't snow. They'd have stuck out like cottontails on the snow.
They kind of would have.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
That was cool. So a lot of white on their feet and up on their bellies, and really starting to see that, and on their face starting to change.
Yeah, yesterday, last evening, yesterday late in the afternoon, the dogs got back in there a little bit and didn't seem like they were coming out, so we kind of parted ways. I kind of went one way hoping we could maybe catch up with the hare on me covering the one end, and you chose to dig into the forest.
No, it was like, it was like, hey, why don't you, you know, if you want to walk back in there and try to cut that off. You know, we can catch these dogs. And it was, as soon as I was not even 30 yards in there, I was thinking, this is the initiation to the UP. This is, okay, we got him to go. So I don't know how many yard, how many, probably a half mile through that stuff. And there were as many trees on the ground laying parallel to the ground as we're standing up, and thick, and just, and you're out there walking around on the trail, and I know what you're thinking. It's like, yep, we got him to go. That happened to me one other time too, bear hunting in North Carolina, and Tracy Jones, like, oh yeah, you just go up around that side there and then come down that draw down that creek and see if you can strike a track. Well, he sent me into Laurel, and he was laughing when I got back.
Yeah, well, I did walk up the trail a little ways, and then I did cut back in about 400 or 500 yards, and dogs kind of cut back to the back around, circled back around to my left, and got back out close to the trail, so I didn't waste a whole lot of time. I hit it back again.
Yeah, I was back.
Back on the trail. And
I was back in there, and it was getting dark, and I was thinking, the last place I want to be is back here when it gets dark. So I saw you on the Garmin and saw you bringing dog. I saw everything bunched up and moving down that trail, and I thought, man, it's time for me to go.
Yeah, well, I had pulled my radio out to give you a buzz, and the batteries were pretty much dead. I couldn't get a hold of you. Or whatever,
yeah, you gave me a dead radio.
Yeah, well, I thought, well, you'd probably see on your Garmin. You can see where I'm at, and I got all the dogs. But, yeah, you know, last week, I was just up here a week ago, and I kind of got caught with my two young dogs out way after dark, and I couldn't get a hold of them. They were way back in there kind of like this, and they just wouldn't cross the road anywhere. Got parallel, just running parallel, and long story short, I had one lay down on me. I had him down for about 15 hours, that youngest dog I got.
Which one?
Here. Homer.
Homer?
Homer, yeah. Henry was, I caught him about 10 o'clock. I got a hold of him. And got him out to the truck, and I just could not get the other one out. He kept picking around back there in that swamp. And looked on my guard, was checking my Garmin the whole time, and showed that he was just not going anywhere. And I thought, man, he had to lay down. That was a long day for him. And sure enough, finally got in there, navigated around the swamp. My brother was up there, and him and I got back in there, and sure enough, he was bedded down. I carried him all the way out, but that was a poor little guy. He had quite an experience last week. Got into a porcupine, thing those young dogs go through sometimes,
right.
You know. And still had a couple of quills in him. I saw he had one under his skin still that morning, and I couldn't get that one out, but he seemed like he was fine. But yeah, so he had a long day, and he just flat laid down on me. But I really like what I'm seeing out of those two young males, man. It's been worth. This is my fifth or sixth trip up here since middle of August, since I started bringing those two young dogs up here. But I've put a lot of miles on them, and it's showing. So it's what you got to do sometimes.
You know, the Beagle is a small hound with a huge heart. You know, I remember being a kid, and my brother was the one that came up. He ended up getting the first Beagle.
Try some of this jerky here. You like jerky?
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. You want me to chew and eat in the mic and stuff?
Yeah.
I'm
going to
just
yeah.
tear off a little piece. That's
not,
pretty good.
Yeah, it's not bad.
That's like a seasoned beef chunk right there.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember those days of hunting with those Beagles, and that you brought back a lot of memories. I'm gonna eat some more jerky. Today for me, I mean, or the last couple days, and the heart of the Beagle is just unbelievable. Those dogs, they came out today and they were dead tired, but they earned it. They really did.
Yeah, they worked pretty good today. Had some very good running.
So tell me, what got you into Beagles? How do you end up? Because everybody knows you as, you know, the Coonhound guy. Well, I mean, a lot of our audience does through coonhounds and things like that. The beagle community knows you from that side of it. But what got you into beagles?
We had beagles when we were kids at home. So we started hunting them back home on the farm already. I don't know, 12, 13 years old, I guess.
Yeah.
We started, got our first beagles. And
what's the earliest, 12 or 13, that'd be the earliest age you remember?
Well, that we had our own dogs, but before that we'd go running with, with other guys that had beagles and stuff like that too. And Dad used to have a beagle when we were really young.
Mm-hmm.
So when Dad ran a little bit, young kids. Grandpa always had beagles and coonhounds and all that stuff, so sometimes we went with him and our uncles. A lot of them ran beagle dogs. Just loved it. And this, I grew up in northern Michigan, northern part of, in the lower still, but a little town called Mayo.
We're not too far away from there now.
No, we're not. No, we're going to come up on Gaylord here after a little while, and then next big town we'll come to is Grayling. And then where I grew up sits just a little bit north, northeast of Grayling, is where Mayo is on the Osawa River. But right there we had both cottontails and hare. And we loved getting on those hare. That's just something exciting about running a hare.
Yeah.
They'll almost cut out of hearing. Now, today there was hardly any times, actually all weekend really, that the dogs really got out of hearing. There were some times they got close to it,
Yeah.
But you could hear them really for, 800-900 yards. You could still hear them pretty good in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that makes a difference, if you got snow on the trees and things like that, that really makes a difference pretty quick. You're not going to hear them that far. It's just something exciting about hare hunting. Always loved it. And still do.
Yeah, it's, cottontail hunting is got its own charm to it, but the circles that these hares make is, and the ability of these beagles and these hounds to sort that out, because we looked at some screens on the Garmins. I mean, they scribbled a dot in there, and yet they brought that hare around multiple times. We saw, how many times did we see that hare cut across the road today, this morning?
Four times. First time. I think you nailed him. No, I got him. I got the first one, didn't I?
Yeah, you
I
did.
Got, yeah.
Yep.
I think it was the fourth time he crossed the road.
Yep. But
he even tried a little trick on the dogs where he come out the middle of the road that one time, went up the road, up the middle of the dirt road.
Yeah,
but they bobble a little bit, but they got him figured out.
Right. So, what is about the beagle that you like so much?
Hey, you know what? A lot of just what you said. They got a lot of heart, and it's just amazing how long and how many miles those dogs can put on in a day, especially if they're in shape. Obviously you saw this just in the last couple of days. You got to have a dog in shape.
Right.
If you don't have a dog in shape, they're just not going to last too long on, especially running all day. Now, my dogs right now are in pretty decent shape, but when we picked them up after we got that last hare, you could see, especially those two young dogs, I picked up that one male that before they got on that last one, he was limping a little bit. He's just tired,
Right.
Just tired, but they would have went the rest of the day, and that's just like that. from there on is just heart and drive and desire, but
it's amazing.
And
they're doing it.
They decided just to pick them up there and call it a good day,
Yeah, they're doing it on 7-inch legs.
Yeah.
They make up for it with that heart and that drive and that desire. I think it's almost like you get inspired by watching a beagle. Mm-hmm. You get inspired. It's like, can I get up and walk back this trail or up this, and you see what that beagle has done all day, and it inspires you to get back into it.
Yeah.
I can't sit here any longer, but I like the way you hunt. I really like and we ate good and we had fires.
Yeah, first thing this morning, turning the dogs loose, got us a little fire started there. And yeah, I love that. That just adds to it for me.
Listening to the hounds run, and they bring it, I know there were times we talked about recording a podcast. I didn't bring the extension cord set up that I normally that I like to use, but how cool would it have been to be sitting by that fire, because those beagles were 20 yards maybe from us, yeah. 15 yards
yeah.
from us,
yeah.
just screaming.
Yeah. Yep, they run through. How many times did they come through there today?
Bunch.
Lots.
Yeah. A bunch. And
you
we
could have probably heard them easily.
Through these mics, even they're directional. Mm-hmm. But what do you look for in a beagle? When you've had – how many beagles do you think you've had in your lifetime?
Oh, gosh, it's hard to tell, Chris. It's I don't know, probably – 20, 30, 40 of them over, you know, different ones, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right now I've got four of them that I keep at the house. I had half a dozen until a couple of weeks ago. I got rid of two of them, but
it's a good thing you got rid of them before I came to hunt with you.
You might have went home with them.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the one I had that I got rid of, she was just a little bit slower than the rest of my dogs and just didn't really fit into my pack, you know. So it's just, you need to, when you rabbit hunt, you want the beagles to pack up, you know. So it's kind of important that you have, your pack is kind of similar as far as foot speed. You'll get some, you know, slower that are just naturally slower and some that have a little more foot, you know. I wouldn't call mine, you know, super fast or anything like that, but they're, you know, a good medium or a little better than medium speed, probably, for the most part, I guess is what most people would call them, but they do a pretty fair job.
I think
I'm just tickled the way my two young males have come along. You know, I started them this last spring, just got them started on cottontail, and then honestly, they got laid up after about April. They got laid up till first trip up here in August, but just from August till now, you know, five, six trips now up here to the UP, man, they've come a long way. But that's just goes to show what you can get done. Put the time in on them up here, and
right,
I love it. They're coming along nicely.
So, I think the farthest I saw your pack behind a hare this last couple of days is probably, you know, 40 yards behind, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. You know, today there was a couple times I was surprised they were as close to him as
every
as
one of them. Yeah. I was surprised every. How many did we shoot? Five.
Four or five.
Four or five hare and every one of them.
And we weren't trying to kill a bunch of them or anything like that. You know, we could have if we'd have really set up to try to shoot more. We could have certainly done. I would certainly hope so, but that wasn't really our game plan, I guess.
No.
I did want to get a couple down to these young dogs today, though, or this weekend, or this week.
Yeah. But the pack was together. They worked together well. They were seemed like they were putting good pressure on the hare without, you know, just blowing it up. Seems like if in not hare hunting, but other you know, you bear hunt or you lion hunt, or if you've got that dog that doesn't stick to, he can blow that up, and you talked about blowing up races and different things, but your pack seems to be pretty close. When that hare would come across the road, they would be your pack was pretty close together.
Yeah.
They were like within, I would say, 20 feet, you know, a circumference of 20 feet, they're working together.
You mean as far as the pack goes?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, you know, most of the time, probably less than that. It kind of depends. You know, it just depends on when we did actually see him. But usually, when the whole pack's on line, you can. I'm not going to say you can throw a blanket over him, but you know,
it was pretty close.
Yeah, that's what you want to look for.
Within 10 feet of each other, and they're just like.
Seems like every time you seems every time you see him cross the road or something where we could see him. You know, yeah, they were.
Can you hare hunt with one dog with one beagle?
Sure, absolutely. And you know what? I don't mind doing that. And matter of fact, I like doing that. I like to solo a dog on hare.
Yeah.
And I've done these. I've had these solo these young males already here in the last several trips. I didn't do it this week here, but But they're doing a fine job. But I love doing that with a young dog like that. They get going. They just let them build that confidence up. You know, that's a big thing, you know, is let them get that confidence up. So, yeah, I absolutely love to solo.
What do you think? It builds the confidence. What else does it do for a young dog like that to solo them?
Well, they have to do everything. They have to do everything on their own. You know, let them figure things out, and you'll see. You know, they'll run into one of the things you get up in here that you saw. We could see it on our Garmins when they got into some swampy areas and stuff. And you know, and that's where they break down a little bit sometimes. You know, but just
like a bald eagle sitting up on that limb
right there. Look at that.
Yep.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Last week last week it was pretty nice when we were up here and saw several of them flying around. That's pretty neat. But
soloing a dog, soloing a young hound by himself, what are you trying to accomplish by doing that?
Give them the confidence, you know, and they have to do it on their own, and it just builds a lot of confidence. That's probably the number one thing. And then you can also just really gauge where they're at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really can. And the confidence, and that's basically the number one thing. And I really feel like that helps. You know, you don't want to, I say, hey, I'm not an expert here on training or anything like that. Never claim to be, but that's just been my experience. You know, I want to do a fair amount of soloing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you want them to pack too. You can overdo soloing to almost to the point where they might get a little too independent. And
I was going to bring it back to that.
Yeah, you know, I've always felt that way. I need to solo them some.
So you solo them,
and especially young dogs.
Yeah,
when you know when you're in the training portion.
So you're looking for every beagle in your pack to be a leader.
Well, to be a contributor.
Contributor?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, I don't necessarily need. I'm just not big on a dog that just needs to fight for the front end.
Okay.
Things like that, you know. And obviously it depends on the dog, you know, but I like a dog that packs up nicely, and usually, you know, and I've had dogs that had to have that front end, but what I look for is a dog that will contribute, you know, not just always a follower, but they got to contribute, you know. That's what makes a good pack. If you have dogs that all contribute in some form, and
mm-hmm.
and I think, you know what, we had I think you probably saw that here in the last couple of days. Every one of them, you know, you saw some picking up some nice checks, you know.
Yeah.
and it wasn't always just the older dogs, you know. Some of the young dogs did a nice job too with that.
How old is Fiddle, your female?
She is, I think she's right at five.
5 years old?
Yep, 5 years old. And we had that other male, Bo, which I brought him along. He actually belongs to a buddy of mine back home, and he's a pretty solid hound. He is I want to say he's going to be a coming three-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember we had him up here when he was 14 months old, and he reminds me a lot of my young male, about the same age when we had him up here.
Henry or Homer?
Homer.
Yeah.
And doing a nice job, you know, at that age already, contributing here, and he was really learning. The next year, bring him up here, and, man, just a big, big difference from that first year to the second year. And that's what you look for. And just like that Bow Dog of my buddies, he's turned out to be a nice, solid hound, you know, and I think he's a coming three-year-old now, and he's just this year again, he's just super solid.
Yeah, yeah. So too much soloing. You say they're always fighting for the front. What happens when you get one dog, or you get let's say you got multiple dogs that are trying to fight for the front? What kind of problems does that?
Oftentimes, that will end up in too many messes and losing the track, running off the front or running off the end of tracks and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Can mess it up. You're talking about soloing a dog. That doesn't, too much soloing isn't necessarily going to make a dog fight for the front. I don't feel like it's just a matter of giving them the confidence they need to be a contributor within the pack more than anything, I guess.
So when you're hunting a young beagle and you're soloing them and you're trying to develop those skills, you know, at what point do you decide, hey, that's enough. That's enough soloing. Let's put them back in the pack and run them with.
Really depends on the dog, each individual dog.
What are you looking for, though?
As far as the how much I solo them?
Yeah. When do you
The confidence they have and how much the confidence that they have gained from it, and then I guess how much they contribute within the pack, you know.
Yeah. So when you're running hares, tell me the difference. You've talked about over the last couple of days, we've talked about, you know, a cottontail dog or a hair dog or a good dog that can do either one. You know, tell me what it is that makes a good hair dog. Because you've talked about that. He's a dynamite hair dog. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, Chris. You know, the majority of what we run is obviously on cottontail, and you can, and I think it's probably like I think we talked about a little bit is some of the coon hunters or whatever have a kind of a mediocre, less than mediocre dog. They think, okay, he's gonna be just fine as a bear dog. Mm-hmm. Well, I think the bear hunters will tell you, no way.
Right.
Well, I think it's the same way here a little bit, but I've seen dogs on cottontail that are excellent on cottontail, and you put them on hair and they're just kind of average. But I've seen other dogs that are decent cottontail dogs that just you put them on hair that will just excel. And I can't really point a finger. I don't know what it is, but I've certainly seen that. And I don't know. You know, I think a lot of times one of the things that you see a little bit different on hair sometimes I think is dogs that can run with their heads up a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, some dogs just seem to be able to do that better than others, you know. But I've seen there's a friend of mine that has one, and he's a very, and I'll use him as an example. He is a better than average hound on cottontail. Very nice dog, very nice hound. Bring him up here, and we've had him up here the last 3 or 4 years, and that dog just excels. And now the last year, he's getting older now or whatever, but he's just a dominant hair dog.
Just so is it the difference between the way the cottontail covers ground and the hair covers ground?
You know, I don't know that I can really answer that. Really, to be, I can throw something out there, but it's, you know, something.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Okay, so say you're hunting in an area that has both hair and cottontail.
Yeah.
Can you tell the difference on what your dogs are running based on how they're moving?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. A lot of times a cottontail is just going to basically circle, and the circle's not going to be more than about 300-400 yards probably, maybe, at most, whereas a hare, he's going to cut out a lot more and maybe do some figure-eight type stuff. Maybe loop around a little bit, pigtail around, I call it, you know.
We saw that.
And, yeah, just some things like that. And, you know, it's nothing for them to take them, you know, 800-900 yards one way.
Yeah.
And they just run differently.
Yeah.
You know, whereas a cottontail most of the time is pretty much going to circle around. And and their hair will circle to an extent sometimes a little bit. And they're kind of unpredictable, really, as far as what their route's going to be, where I think a cottontail is a little bit more predictable maybe. But
well, this was my first time ever hunting hare, and I've hunted cottontails with beagles before. And a cottontail just kind of – you can kind of gauge where they're going to come out and know where it's going to happen.
Yeah.
How many times just today – you know, we're sitting there at the fire, and it's like, oh, it's coming close. We ought to go ahead and knock this one down. And I jump up and grab my shotgun. I walked out there, set up, and boom, he didn't come out. And he's already turned and headed back in.
Yeah, yeah. No, that happens quite a bit.
It was a whole new experience for me, and it was a good experience. It was exciting. So, there's a whole different aspect of beagles and hare hunting and cottontail hunting, but you work it with a lot of UKC beagle trials. and in your job. And just lay that format out for us a little bit about Beagle trials and how it's, there's a huge difference in Coonhound trials. But tell us, describe a Beagle trial.
Yeah, we have the one format that's called the Hunting Beagle format. And that is where you draw dogs out in a group or a cast of four dogs in a cast. And then there's a point system set up for it. For the order that the dogs all strike in, the handlers call their dogs struck just like they do in the Coonhound events.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's points for that. And then basically it's kind of simulated after a real hunt or whatever. You kind of stay where the dogs jump the rabbit. You stay there and you hope they circle it back around to you. That's what they should do, circle it back around to you. And then when you see the rabbit, you call a line, you mark a line, let's say it runs by this stump or whatever, you call a line, then you score the dogs 1, 2, 3, 4. So there's a point system for scoring lines.
Mm-hmm.
So once they bring it back to the line is when they, or after they score the line is when you can secure their strike points plus. But in between all that, you have what we call a check and a progress clock. So after the dogs shut up for X amount of time, they all shut up. We call a check. So they go into a check, and then there's merit points for the dog that picks up the recovery, and results in the track being going back to a runnable state again. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the scoring. And then there's also the progress clock. Let's say they don't recover it, and after like 3 minutes, the track is called dead. They just haven't progressed it, whether they've shut up completely or just simply have not progressed it. Then they call time after that, handle the dogs. Then it's a matter of trying to determine why the track ended. If it's just a simple, they just made a simple lose, and in that case, the dogs are going to get demerited for that. But sometimes you might have determined that they ended up in a hole or a place of refuge or whatever, and of course they don't get demerited for that. So that's the one format, and then it's just as simple as, you know, at the end of either a 60 or a 90-minute hunt, dog with the best score is going to be your winner.
And then, so a dog gets scored on strike points, which one gets out there and gets a rabbit up or a track up and moving,
mm-hmm.
and then basically which one is crossing the line that you put out there.
Yep, line points.
All right, so that brings me back.
And recovery points, those three things, basically.
Recovery points.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what's a line point worth? First line.
First line is 100, second is 85, 70, and 55.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and then strike points are 100, 75, 50, and 25.
What about recovery points?
Recovery points is 20 points.
20 plus points.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm trying to wrap my brain around this, and I'm going back to that solo and a dog deal, because if I'm going to compete, I obviously want a dog that gets gone, gets out there, gets struck, and carries a line, because that could potentially be, what, 200 points, right, if he's first and
exactly.
first.
Yep, exactly.
And then, but if he's too fast, do you get minus points?
If he's too fast, I don't know if he can be too fast necessarily. They just need to have – it's the line points – purpose for the line point stuff is for two things, obviously. They get their strike points secured, but more importantly is to gauge the dog on control, what we call control. They need to be close enough to the line, and they need to have respect for that line. You know, a dog mm-hmm. that's just going to run too loose or have no regard for the line, maybe, you know, swinging off way off the line, that dog's not going to get scored.
Okay.
You know, so you have to have in the competition, you have to have a dog that has some line control, you know, or
yeah.
otherwise you're not going to get those line points. And
because you could potentially, you know, if you've got a slower beagle and they're really good at picking up loses, then but they're only getting 20 points for picking that up, they'd have to do that 5 times.
Yeah,
to make up that first line score.
Then. Well, it is, you know, it is. But if you have, you don't need, you know, I know, I know a lot of guys will, you know, think this, they got to have this race to get that first line, just right. Really focused on having that front end dog. And I'm telling you, you don't always need that front end dog or the dog that, you know, all this foot. You know, I think there's, you know, if you have a dog that has good line control and has, you know, has decent feet or decent foot, they can't be, you know, just too dang slow, you know, can't keep up with a pack or anything like that. But you don't always have to be that first or second dog. But I tell you, if you have a dog that runs clean on the line, they're, you know, if you have that front end dog is going to miss that line or whatever, you know, that's second, third slotted dog. Boy, if they can come through that line, they can still compete.
Yeah.
You don't just need a front end dog to win trials.
Yeah.
And another thing is, you know, those you'd be surprised how many times those checkpoints or recovery points come into play. Mm-hmm. They really do. Yeah. And you need that type of dog. You know, if you have one that, you know, they need to be clean enough to, you don't have a check dog or, you know, a dog that can keep a rabbit going, you're not going to have any points to score at the end of the day, which kind of simulates the whole thing with hunting. You know, if they can't bring it around to the gun, why, you're not going to have much of a rabbit hunt.
Well, I'll give you an example. You know, I said my brother, he was the one that got the first beagle. And Sally was more of a consistent, stay on the track, bring the rabbit around to the gun dog.
Yeah.
Well, I found a little beagle. His name was Barney. And Barney was fast. Man, when the first time I cut him loose, is like, wow. You know, I'm gonna even then at 15, 16 years old, you're competing with your brother's dog. And Barney was fast. And it was cool because yeah. You turn Barney loose by himself and he would streak around there and bring a rabbit around. But he was so fast that a lot of times he wasn't good at picking up loses. You know,
yeah.
He was not good yeah. about coming back in those check times and picking up his loses. And here would come Sally. You know, she'd come up through there. She'd be 30 seconds behind him. She'd sort it out. Pick it up and bring it on around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is mm-hmm. So yeah, Barney was the fast dog. He was a little spun out and wigged out, and he'd run like a wild man, but he wasn't good about picking up those loses.
Yeah Well, there's a good example probably of maybe that little bit slower dog, but clean up some of the messes they
she
leave
did. And yeah, she would clean up the messes.
Yeah, you know, you're talking about soloing a dog. You know, that one time I had this one dog that was, he was one of the toughest rabbit hounds we had. I mean, he was a nice, nice hound. Now, this was back in the day before all the telemetry systems and all the training systems that we now have. But, man, that was still one of the nicest rabbit hounds we had, but he had one major fault, and that was running fast game. We run deer. I mean, he would leave a rabbit track to run a dang deer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, and it happened so many times, but, you know, we tried to break this dog, and he's just one of those that we just couldn't get broke off a deer. But he's one of those, you know, back in those days, you just say, well, doggone, that's going to be the end of the day for us. But leave your jacket laying out, go out 5-6 hours later, and never failed. He was always laying right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only dog, and we've done it with other dogs too, but that was it. That happened a lot with that dog. But finally, you know, it just got old. And I tell you, we've had him up north too, and that didn't work. You know, that's another thing with, you know, if you're going to go run hare, or any, you know, even cottontail, doesn't really matter. But if you don't have broke dogs in there, a dog that isn't broke can just ruin your day in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing that, you know, you want to work on your young dogs with, you know, and you want to, at some point, you need to expose them to that, you know, get that, get any such problems worked out. Otherwise, you know, just like a couple days we've had here, it can just ruin those days
yeah.
in a hurry. You know,
we didn't have any yeah. of that, but
no, and not to say, hey, I'm telling you, just a month ago I was up here, and that young dog I got here, he took off on a deer, and didn't take him very long, take him a couple miles, you know. But so I gotta watch that a little bit and keep working on him, you know. But
so a beagle being primarily focused on being track minded. You know, that's mm-hmm. their job, is to run a track. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to break your beagles off of deer and other fast game and things that, how hard is that to do?
You know what? I've not really ever found it to be very tough with the training systems we have and everything. If you, I'm not a guy that is going to be quick on the trigger, for one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not a big, big on that. But I am more into kind of exposing them to it and knowing exactly what I'm basically setting them up. You know, if I have one that's going to be a problem, it's not going to take me too long till I'm going to set that dog up and know exactly what is there, that he is actually running a deer, and try to get that broke. But to answer your question, I've never really had a dog since we've had this that couldn't eventually be broke. Mm-hmm. I've had some that were a lot harder to break than others, you know, but for the most part, I haven't found it to be too hard.
So
there's a difference. You know, there's one thing there where you can break them to the point where they're not going to run one if they come across it on their own. But there's another thing to be if they're influenced. You know, if the rest of the pack or another dog's going to run one, there's your second test on your dog, whether you've got him broke or not.
Right. So how do you go about breaking a young beagle? I can't believe the number of side-by-sides and stuff moving north to the UP here.
Yeah, deer season. North on 75 deer season's here. Yep, deer season's up, opening up Sunday, yeah. I believe. So yeah.
So north. How do you set them up? What does Alan Gingrich do to break his young dogs to ensure that when they open their mouth they're on air?
I'm going to take them out, set them up. By setting them up, I'm going to go out, drive around till I find a deer, mm-hmm. and put them right on it. Not put them right on it necessarily. I'm not going to carry them out there and put it on it, but I'm going to turn them loose, make sure we go across, or he goes across his track. I'm going to set it up to where he goes across the track, and as soon as he hits that thing, I'm going to start working on him a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's going to be light to begin with, probably, and whatever it takes. I think it's important to me. I don't want that dog to ever know, and they're all the pros are going to tell you, you know, what how it's supposed to work, and I want him to think that deer is what's hurting him,
mm-hmm.
and he doesn't want anything to do with that track. But it really, again, it depends on the dog, and I'm going to give him as much as I need to let him know this is nothing he wants to mess with.
Right.
And that's going to, again, it's going to depend on the dog. Some it's going to take a little bit more. I'm going to have to hit them a little bit harder, you know, than others. But for the most part, you know what, I've never really had a big problem with getting a dog broke. I think it's important to just simply set them up. Too many times I've seen it, you know, and I'll tell you one thing, Chris, is if you're up here hare hunting, if you've not hare hunted much, and we bring guys up here that haven't, you know, they're used to running cottontails or whatever, they get on a hare, and especially if their dog's running by themselves or maybe solo on a dog, you question it right away. You think, man, is he running fast game here or not? Because that's one of the differences. You saw this weekend. It doesn't take long for him to go 800 yards.
I know. It was amazing how fast they can cover ground, the way that hare buzzes out there and just covers the ground in front of them.
Yeah, you know, so, you know, when somebody hasn't run hare much or whatever, and your dogs get on a hare, you know, you know how some guys are a little trigger happy with that Tritronics or what have you. You know, and that's just never good.
What about coyotes and fox?
You know what?
Much problem
never
with
have really not really with beagles that I know. Right, here's that Jay's where we were the other day.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty nice store, isn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Never really had many problems with it. You know, mostly, you know, with as far as beagles go. Is usually deer, if anything, for the most part. You know, there's some other game like turkeys and pheasants and things like that. Birds, they'll run then too.
Will they?
Oh yeah, yeah. They will. Yeah, yeah.
That might not be a bad deal.
Well,
pheasants.
Yeah.
But no, the one thing that I noticed about hunting with you is the way you handle your dogs. It was I really liked the way you gave them encouragement. You talked to them. It was, you talked about your buddy that talks to them like they're kids and stuff, but, you kind of do too.
Not like he does.
Yeah.
but you know, no, I like the part of building that relationship with the dog.
I never saw any frustration. I never saw any, you know, anything that looked like, you know, you weren't breaking off the limb to straighten out some problems. You know, it was not that there weren't any problems, but I saw the way you interacted with your hounds, and it was kind of neat. It was pretty refreshing. There wasn't any frustration. It was just like, hey, they're just dogs, and we'll have that occasionally, but this is a high quality pack of dogs that I hunt with the last couple of days.
Well, I don't know about that. You know, they got to...
Don't be humble about it. Don't take away my blessing here. I'm trying to brag on you.
Well, no, I appreciate that. But, you know, it helps to have decent dogs. But you know what? That's another thing you kind of learn over the years. You know, it's... I guess it doesn't cost any more to feed some decent dogs, as you know. So you kind of learn what's going to work for you and what doesn't.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, for me, honestly, Chris, I don't get to hunt nearly as much as I'd like to, and oftentimes in the summertime, you know, especially, I just don't, you know, I'm on the road a lot and just don't get to work dogs nearly as much as I would like to, you know. So mine tend to get set back a little bit sometimes, but for the most part, you know, just like that five-year-old dog I have, you know, if I was hunting hard, she's, you know, some guys would have the same amount of time in her already on the ground as, you know, by the time a dog's 3 years old, you know, but she does a pretty fair job. The other thing I really like, and I think I really have, and I with young dogs especially, is having dogs that will hunt. They have to go hunting, and as you saw up there this weekend, we're not going to be able to go walk dogs around and trying to kick brush piles and stuff like that for them. That's not going to happen.
No.
We need them. They got to go hunting. There's no way around it. But I think it kind of helps, you know, just like that older female I have, you know, she's got a lot of hunt in her, and I don't think you ever saw her standing around anywhere when we cut her loose.
She would have gone again.
Yeah.
She would have gone hunting again.
Oh, yeah. But
at the end of the day today.
You know, so I think a dog like that is good to start young dogs with. You know, actually get them out there. Get going, you know. And last thing you want to do is not be able to get a dog to go hunting, you know. But, yeah, they got to go.
Yeah, I don't even know there's no way you could walk a dog where we were. There were some trails and things like that, but we weren't striking hares on trails. We were striking them back in the stuff that we didn't want to walk through.
Yeah, I know. They gotta go hunt.
Yep.
There's no way around it, really.
And what do you attribute that to? Is it exposure? Is it genetics?
I think number one is probably genetics. It's got to be in them. If they don't have that go desire or whatever, I think that's the main thing, really. I don't think it's something I can just, you know, you can train into a dog just to make him hunt, you know. I think a lot of it is just that desire and that drive, you know, and have that hunt, you know. And she's always had that, but, you know, I think, like you said, genetics. But, you know, I know where her mama was the same way, had an excellent hunt. And her mama's, that whole line of dogs had an excellent hunt. And same way with her daddy, you know. And so that's one thing that's very important. Cannot stand a dog that just won't hunt, won't go hunting.
All right, so we'll kind of talk about the elephant in the room here, but what's been your experience with trying to make a dog go hunt? You think I'll put some hunt in that dog? We've always, you know, we've heard those guys that stand around and say, oh, you know, whether it's a coonhound, a beagle, a bear dog, I'll make them go hunt. I'll break me off a limb, and they won't want to stand around. What's been your experience with that?
You know, I think beagles maybe be a little bit different. For me, it's natural instinct, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
That's I just don't think I can put that into them. Not Not so much as, you know, there's obviously there's different tactics you can use, training tactics or whatever, you know, and to make them go. You know, I do a little bit of squirrel hunting too or whatever, and I've, you know, I've never been one to be too tough on a dog for anything like that, but I think it just...
My experience is if you start working on a dog, if you've got to start with a dog that's genetically hardwired to want to get out there and hunt. Last podcast we talked about prey drive, you know, being such a high ingredient. It's a key to nose hunting, you know, the treeing instinct, whatever it is, they want to get, they've got that prey drive. And my experience with trying to start with an inferior gene pool and then trying to train the hunt into them is really the only thing you do is teach them to hide.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly right.
Because
they'll
fade out there 50 or 75 yards and you're sitting there and now we can watch them on a Garmin screen. Yeah. And it's constantly getting you out there to push,
yeah,
you know. And where we were hunting, you can't do that. You can't push a dog. They've either got to go hunting or you're going to have a short day around the, you know, cooking hot dogs at the campfire.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
With your dog sitting there beside you or 50 yards out in the brush hiding from you.
Yeah.
So,
you know, now there's the other thing with that is, you know, that female I have, she'll get out there. She'll range out there pretty quick and the hunt's pretty hard. There's also that happy medium. You get back home getting on cottontail, you do got to have a dog that will handle a little bit. You want them to hunt where you want them to hunt.
Sure.
Where that's a little different back home than it is up north, you know.
Yeah.
Up north where, hey, I can't, I'm, you know, okay, what are we talking about, 500,000 acres here? You know, go find one. You know, I can't take you to that place over there where I want you to go.
Yeah.
I just, you know, versus back home, you know, okay, we're hunting this 40-acre field or whatever, but I want you hunting up here in this corner.
Right.
You know, so there's also, you know, there's also that where you can, and she is, she's kind of borderline on that. She'll, if I don't watch it a little bit, you know, I hunt a little differently at home. You know, I try to, you know, get them to, hey, I need you over here, you know.
At home, she'll put you in strange places.
Yeah. Well, not if I don't watch it, she will.
Yeah.
Absolutely
yeah.
will.
Yep. Yep. So how do you work on that? How do you train her to do that?
Basically voice commands, you know, and kind of, you know, kind of walking around with you. They need to listen to you, you know. So
she can be a little hard-headed,
you know, but
that's what a lot of people say, you know. Beagles are hard-headed. Beagles are hard to train cuz they're hard-headed.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're starting a young beagle and kind of walk me through the sequence of, you know, you get this beagle pup, it's bred the way you want, it comes from stock that you believe based on the genetics is going to be a good hunting dog, a dog that's going to operate at the speed you want, because at this stage in the game, Alan, you know enough about beagles and genetics and different things. So you get this puppy at home, how do you start that pup?
I'm usually going to, usually I will start them in a starting pen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know some guys have starting pens, you know, just for that purpose. And that's usually the first
thing I do. I'm talking baby boot camp before you ever turn them loose with the hopes of that they're running a hare.
Perfect. Yeah, no, that is, if you have a place where you can let them run around, that is the best thing. You know, leave them out as much and socialize with them.
Yeah.
Socialize. Can't stress that enough. That's a big thing. Is socialization right from puppy up.
So,
you know, and
do you do it with treats, hot dogs? I mean, what are you doing out there?
I don't know so much as just that, but yeah, that's some of it. But you know what? Back in the day, I used to do some, you know, some training stuff, maybe a little bit of dragging hot dogs and stuff like that, you know, but really, I don't do so much of that anymore. Most of the big thing for me is make sure they get socialized a lot. And,
when you say, you know, socialized, what do you mean by that?
Because
the way I socialize, like I told you that my wife just, you know, we ended up with a pit bull terrier at our house. So my idea of socializing that dog to make sure that he's not biting the mailman and getting me sued is to take him to town and let people pet him and make them realize that people aren't the boogeyman. So when you say socialize with a beagle, what do you mean?
I'm spending as much one-on-one time with them. Okay. And put them in the truck, take them places with you.
Yeah.
Things like that, absolutely. You know, but when you're at home, let them run around, you know, especially if you can do that. Just get down with them, play with them a little bit. You know, if you got kids and stuff like that at home, you know, let the little kids play with little puppies. I like to love to be able to do that. You know, but then beyond that, when you're doing other chores and things around the place or whatever, yeah, let them run with you and just, they know their name and this and that, try to call them and this and that, you know, and sometimes you do with treat stuff too, you know,
uh-huh.
but, yeah, just a lot of socialization and, make them like you, you know, because I can tell you, Chris, if you're going to get a puppy and, put him in the pen, you know, you're going to take him, your plan is to put him in a starting pen when they're 6, 7, 8 months old. And you leave them penned up until they're that age. Yeah, good luck with that.
What, you know, what kind of problems do you see?
You're not going to have a very you're not going to have a very good connection with that dog for number mm-hmm. one, you know. But
so when you take that puppy to the starting pen,
mm-hmm.
okay, you've got this big enclosure. It's got mm-hmm. it's been managed for, you know, we used to joke around and call it Rabbitat,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you walking that puppy along with you and trying to kick rabbits up for them to get them rolling?
No, not normally. Normally they stay in there in the starting pen. Maybe a day at a time. You know, maybe all day long.
Uh-huh.
And you just let them do that naturally. Just leave them out there. Let it, when basically nobody around. I'm not walking with them or the guy I take most of my pups to when I have one. That's what he'll do. He'll put them in there. Just leaves them. He might put them in there in the morning, go to work, and come home at night or after work or whatever, and then pick them up, take them home. Just do that for several days. But he'll watch their progress a little bit. You know, he's going to come back and see. And oftentimes, you know, if they've got it in them, they'll stumble. You know, those pens usually have plenty of rabbits in there, and they're kind of set up for them to bump into and be able to see them, you know. Start out with sight chase stuff, you know, and all that. You know?
Right.
But then, for the most part, I don't like to leave them in there too long, just long enough to where they actually start using their noses good and start trailing them. That's about all they need. You can overdo it quickly with them and go backwards on that.
How does a beagle move backwards off of being in a
too many sight chases?
Okay.
Too many sight chases, not using their nose.
Mm-hmm.
Once they've associated what that thing is they're after, you know, or whatever, and then after that, you know, you want them to get to use their nose.
Yeah.
Once they start doing that, you know, just kind of monitor that. And the guy I take him to, he's pretty good about, you know, it may be 3 days, call you and say, hey, you need to come get your pup. He's ready to go, you know, or it may be a week, maybe a week and a half, you know.
Yeah.
It just depends on the pup, but yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, socializing with one, you know, and you saw a little bit of my young dog here. He's a little bullheaded, you know, the youngest one. He's
which one, Henry or Homer?
Homer.
Yeah.
He's gonna be a little bit bullheaded or whatever.
But
he did well today.
He did, yeah.
But now last week there was some times about the closest I could get to him was about 500-600 yards, and he wasn't gonna listen to me. He wasn't coming in. He was just dead set on hunting, you know, and he wasn't coming to that, you know.
How do beagles respond to e-collars?
Pretty good, usually.
For recall?
Pretty good, usually.
Yeah?
Yeah, and honestly, I've not worked on him very much on that at all. And mm-hmm. I probably am more hesitant than most when it comes to e-collar stuff, you know, but... I would rather work on him at home in an environment where I can actually see him versus where we were when he's 600, 700, 800 yards out there. And
that was a recipe for disaster if you get on the button there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You might not see him again.
Yeah.
500,000 acres of terrain that you can't get yeah. through.
Yeah.
And you may never see him again. So
yeah. Well, when I need him to come, I don't want to. I guess my point is I need him in an environment where I can kind of see what he's doing, and I don't want to see him trying to work a track and then, mm-hmm. you know, because I'm not going to try to get him in on that, you know,
right.
especially not a young dog.
Right.
You know, I want him, if I need him to come here, I want him to see that he really doesn't have anything. He's not working anything, you know. And
when you're starting him out. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm the same way with hounds, you know. Start them out in that controlled environment. And then it gets to the point where you polish that hound, and then when you hit that tone button,
yeah.
you want them to stop what they're doing, because you're not just toning them because you're tired and you want to go somewhere else. I tone a dog, and when I tone a dog, it's because I need them to come back to me. They're headed towards the I-75 that we're driving down, mm-hmm. you know, and I need them to stop what they're doing.
Right here's exit 259. There's
Milo.
Mayo.
Mayo.
Mayo, yep.
That's the L silent.
The yeah. No, there's no L. M-I-O.
Oh. That said Milo.
That's this is home country for me right here, Chris.
I'll be darned.
There's the Hartwick Pines I talked about we'd go to every year. Has the biggest tree in the state of Michigan in Hartwick Pines.
Is that right?
Yeah.
How big is it?
I forget how big it is. It's huge. I remember it's huge.
How long's it been since you've seen it?
Since I was a kid, probably 14, 15, 16, I guess.
Is it still there?
I mean, that
was a long time ago.
Yeah, I would assume it is.
We already established how old you are. That's, that was a long time ago.
I would think
ago.
So. Yeah. That I forget. We always said it was over 100 years old, so I'm sure another 20, 30 years, I would think it's still standing.
You're shaving years off, 20 or 30.
Yeah,
Let's talk about wolves in the UP real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever worry about your beagles and wolves?
Yes and no. I think you have to be, have some common sense about it and be aware of it, you know. But not be irresponsible. And I don't think you want to leave. I don't think it's ever going to be a good idea to leave your pack out there after dark and things like that. You know, mm-hmm. I tell you, a week ago, that's what I was really worried about. You know, I want to try to get my dogs rounded up before dark.
Yeah.
You know, well before dark. You know, and just get out. But you know, we have never had a problem with it. You know, and knock on wood. You know, you hear stories this and that, but and I've never seen one until. Just this year is the first time I've ever seen one crossing the road, and that was at night, like 9 o'clock at night. Is the only time I've ever seen one. But you know, so for the most part, I think just being, have some common sense about it, not being stupid about it. And you know, back home, I actually like to run the dogs at nighttime,
right.
especially in the summertime. Mm-hmm. You know, if you get a chance, run them at night. And but I just. Because of some of the wolves they have up there, it's not something I would even.
So you don't let it
intentionally.
You don't let it. It's not something that's on your mind when you pull in, because you hunt a pretty concentrated area that you've hunted for several years. But when you pull up, you're not thinking, man, I hope there aren't any wolves here.
No, it's probably in the back of my mind. Somewhere, but it's not like and maybe I shouldn't say that. It's not like, you know, obviously I would be devastated to have any of my dogs get caught by a wolf or anything like mm-hmm. that. But I've just not, you know, I'm not that worried about it. I think
I've kind of changed.
I'll leave it at that.
You
know, that's very debatable, and it depends on who you talk to. But I know, you know, some of the guys, when they've had issues with wolves up there, has mostly been at nighttime.
Okay.
You know, so maybe being a little irresponsible, leaving them out running all night long. You know, and it's you're asking for that. That's just, you know. Probably a little irresponsible. I just wouldn't do that, you know, because of it. Other than that, outside of that, just never had any issues or anything like that, you know, so, and hope we never do.
Right. And I've never had, we hunt the Swan and we hunt places where there have been wolves and things like that, but I've never experienced a wolf encounter. So I don't know how I would feel
mm-hmm.
if... Mm-hmm. I turned my dogs loose, and something happened with a wolf. But I've had dogs hit on the road, mm-hmm. and in my mind, there's a hazard every time you turn a dog loose. I wouldn't turn a dog loose on a wolf track or within, you know, a quarter mile of fresh wolf tracks any more than I would turn them loose in the median of this interstate.
Exactly.
And people down south deal with gators, alligators, mm-hmm. and people in the west, southwest deal with rattlesnakes, and everybody's got something going on, and it seems like the wolf is a natural villain from childhood. I mean, it's instilled in us even from childhood fairy tales that it's bad, and I'm not a wolf lover at all. I mean, if they delist a wolf, and if they establish wolf season in the UP and I had a wolf tag, I'd smoke it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, absolutely. Me too.
And I got a message when I posted on Facebook that we were up here hunting, and somebody wanted me to ask you how you felt about wolves and dealt with wolves up here. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, you know, we've just never had any issues at all, you know, and don't really know anybody. We talk to the locals whenever they mention that, you know, or we talk about that sometimes, you know, just to, obviously we're not up there day in and day out, you know, but, mm-hmm. And it kind of depends on who you talk to. It really does, you know. It's kind of like anything else, you know. I think the chances of some of the guys in the South with gators are far greater than wolves in the UP.
Hmm. Yep. So
now, when I say that, you know, I don't want to eat my words. You know, I would hate to see any dogs get involved with wolves up there, you know, but that's just been our experience. And to answer your question, yeah, it's always in the back of your mind, but just like you said, you know, back home, anything can happen. You can get a dog hit on the road and things like that. There's always that hazard.
We've had dogs fall in wells. We've had dogs go in caves and be lost. And we've had dogs hit on the road, and there's always some hazard. I think the big thing about wolves is that it's been something that has been forced upon us with no legal remedy up to this point. You know what I mean?
I do.
We turn these wolves loose, and they've got this big, you know, this big social emotional attachment to them, the icon right behind, you know. I've seen things about being the icon, like the American Eagle is the wolf, and it's just been a deal that we felt like, if you want to have wolves, that's okay, but let's manage them, let's not treat them like they're something special. They're established, their populations are thriving, just like we would manage a deer population or hunt rabbits, let's take a few off the landscape, you know? Yeah. That's the biggest problem that I think most people have, even houndsmen, they have with them. It's like, let's manage them.
Yeah. See, now, I don't know really, you know, they have some hound federations up here in Michigan, like the UP UP Bear Houndsmen Association, Michigan Hunting Dog Federation.
Right.
You know, and they're very involved with the whole wolf thing in northern Michigan. So you'd probably have to ask some of those guys, you know, as far as when you talk about, you know, hound hunting at night, you know, and things like that. You know, I don't know if those guys have, you know, what they run into or what they would say, you know, as far as the nighttime thing, if that's if that plays a part, or if they see more, you know, more problems hunting hounds at night or not.
I guarantee you that if I lived in the UP, just as an outsider, I have pretty strong emotions about dumping wolves in an area. There's a reason why the wolves were taken off the landscape a long time ago. And if I lived here and I depended on the Hiawatha National Forest to run my hounds, and I'd have some pretty strong emotional ties
so
to that.
So would I, absolutely. Absolutely.
And I would want some answers about what my remedies were for dealing with this stuff. And it's like a couple years ago, Montana was pressured to close or put more restrictions on the amount of time between that a trapper had to check his traps. And there were a lot of outside people from big cities with anti-hunting organizations. Their real agenda is to stop hunting altogether, but the way they do that is to whittle away at different parts of it. So they wanted to tighten up the restrictions on Montana trappers about how long a period of time it was between when they checked their traps. Well, the problem is people in Montana ought to decide that, you know. Mm-hmm. People in the UP ought to decide when too many wolves is too many wolves. Mm-hmm. and things like that. But I think there's a lot of people that stick their noses in stuff that they don't have any business sticking their noses in. And it's really up to the people in Michigan. And if I want to come up here and run a beagle or a hound, and then I've got to kind of go along with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. You know, today we talked a little bit about all the bureaucrats and this and that, but I agree 100%. You know, I think the people of Michigan should be more involved in what happens and how they're regulated.
Yeah, absolutely. Not somebody lives in that's never seen the Upper Peninsula.
Exactly, in Detroit or someplace, yeah.
Or even in farther
like
away than
Lansing,
that.
Yeah.
Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. or New York City, mm-hmm. you know, that's never seen the UP. So, but, so let's get back to beagles. I had something that I was going to ask you about beagles and bring it back around.
Well, I've got a question for you before we cut this off. So tell me what were your expectations? Never been on a hare hunt. Certainly you probably had some, what did you expect? And what did you think about it afterwards, or how were you close?
You know, my expectations, for one thing, I kind of didn't really have a whole lot of expectations. I've never been to the UP. This is the first trip up there, so I was excited about coming and seeing the magical land across the bridge and seeing what that was all about, and that didn't disappoint. I was really...
it's different. The landscape is different.
It is.
You agree, right?
You know, I mean, there's cedar trees. You saw me walking around and looking at different trees, and you know, there's blue spruce, and there's longleaf pine, and then you get into some of the cedar varieties that are different from the eastern cedars that I'm used to. You know, so the landscape was a big surprise to me, and there were a lot of hardwood trees or deciduous trees that. That were foreign to me. Yeah, there were beech and there was maple, but there's still a couple trees up there that I'm not sure what they were. I know what a birch is, you know, white birch, or I know that sort of tree, but there was a lot of stuff up there that I didn't see or I didn't recognize. Mm-hmm. As far as the hare hunting goes, you know, I was really not knowing what I was getting into. I thought it would be a lot like a cottontail hunt. And I saw right away that there was a big difference in the way a hare covers ground than there is with a cottontail.
Yeah.
And
Wednesday afternoon, the conditions didn't seem to be as good, or the tracking didn't seem to be quite as good. We had it was a little spottier than today, you know. After Wednesday, this really wasn't what I call pounding.
Right.
You know? But now today we had a little more pounding than we did yesterday. You know,
right.
But I think the conditions were just better. But yesterday it was so windy and everything else. But today the conditions were pretty good and the running was really good. And it was very, today was very a good
good average hunt up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really liked the fact that I enjoyed hunting with you because it wasn't like you weren't uptight about what dogs were doing. You weren't up, you know, let's get up there and kill this rabbit. Get up here. Come on, come on, come on, come on. You know, it was pretty laid back and it was relaxing. And it was a lot of times when I bear hunt, if I've got a hound in it or if I'm coon hunting and I've got a hound in it, then I'm a lot more consumed by what my dogs are doing. And it was kind of nice. It was really nice to unplug from that. I didn't give a crap what your dogs were doing.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
your problem, not yeah. mine. You know? But a lot of times when you go hunting with guys, it's like you don't know what to expect out of the – because this is the first time we've ever hunted together.
Yeah.
We've known each other for years, but we've never hunted together. And you don't know what to expect from a guy that's – got a pack of hounds, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is it going to be a giant train wreck or is it going to be pleasurable? And I can say that it was 100% pleasurable. The you could feel the excitement in those dogs and see the heart and the drive and everything else. I mean, it was a complete success as far as I'm concerned, coming up and hunting a couple days with you.
Yeah, well, good. You know, I appreciate you coming up here with me and everything, but, you know, just starting a fire, you know, take some fire log, you know, get some fire started. That's what I love, you know, about the UP, going up there and just get a little fire going. There's nothing like at this time of the year. You standing around the fire and listen to dogs, you know. Sometimes, you know, eventually you want to go shoot one, I guess, go do it. But, you know, that's not what I go up there to go harvest a bunch of hair. It's never really been my thing. You know, I'm all about the dogs, you know, and I want to try to get some miles on those young dogs, and I do want to get some fur in their mouths,
mm-hmm.
you know. You know.
They like it.
Yeah, we're coming home. We got four or five hair in the bag, you know, that we're going to take home, and hopefully you'll try it.
Yeah.
And that's not what it's about. It was just, you know, I consider it definitely a success. Really do.
Yeah.
And it was good. I was glad you could go with me. It's good to have you. Good conversations, and
it was fun. It was just a lot of fun. And highly recommend not overlooking the understated beagle. You know, in the hound world, a lot of the crowds I run with, you know, we're talking about, you know, bear dogs and lion dogs and coon dogs and big and exciting and loud, and it was really fun to just see this dynamite in such a small package.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Heck, you can pick them up and carry them to the truck.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Hang on to that dog right there. I wasn't worried about carrying a leash. I'd just pick Homer up and carry him back to the,
it was
neat. I loved it.
No, it's exciting. It's always been something I've always enjoyed, you know. And it's, they're a little dynamite and a little package right there, you know. But hey, there's good beagles and there's beagles that aren't as good, I guess. But you know, I don't have the best beagles by any stretch, you know. But I have a pretty decent pack that can run a rabbit and bring a rabbit, or in this case a hare, back to you, and you know that's what you want.
But yeah, it was awesome.
Heck yeah.
So before we wrap it up, if somebody's out there and they're listening to this podcast and they're thinking, man, I'd like to try, that sounds like fun, you know, beagle's something that they're cheaper to feed, okay, they're not big crazy dogs as far as, you know, knocking over furniture and stuff. I think maybe I could fit this into my life. What does a person need to look for when they're out looking for a beagle that they want to hunt with?
I would advise somebody to go to buy a beagle that is started, can run its own rabbit. It's mm-hmm. as simple as that. Can run its own rabbit and bring it and circle a rabbit. If you can have a dog that will, number one, hunt, number two, be able to circle a rabbit back to you. I don't care. Speed and all that doesn't really matter so much. That's what, those are the two things you want to look for. You'll find plenty of dogs that will jump in with another dog and run a track with another dog. That's an interesting sign on the back of that truck, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Run with another dog and bring it around and everything. But if it can do it by itself, that is what you want to look for.
Sure.
One that will go hunt, jump its own rabbit, and bring it around to you. If you can have that, if that's the type of dog you want to look for.
Okay, so
and go hunt with the dog. Go hunt with the dog.
Are those dogs hard to come by?
Not usually. Not usually. Not for the most part.
And what kind of money would I be looking at to get a dog that simply can do a couple of those things?
Under $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I would say probably average $300-$500.
Okay. So that's doable for most.
Yeah.
That's pretty doable.
Sure.
And then you get that dog, and then you just get out there and you just hunt him.
Yep. There's more deer right there. You're going to be, I would always suggest you're going to be better served to pay $400-$500 on a dog that can do those two things. We'll go hunting and run a rabbit on its own and circle it.
Mm-hmm.
Then you are spending $150 or $200 on a puppy, especially if it is your first beagle that you buy.
Yeah.
I would advise paying the $300-$500 for even if it's just a very average dog.
Yeah, and then learn from there.
Exactly.
You know, you get a beagle, and you can get him out there. You can maybe run him with your buddy's beagles, but you're in the hunt now, and you can say, hey,
yep.
You know, I want to improve here, and I want to, you know, maybe look for this in my next dog.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. It does seem like, from my experience, that beagles have... I don't know what it is. We talked about this a little bit, but it seems like beagles are hardwired to run and track, and it comes more naturally to them than a lot of our other hound breeds that we're expecting to do a job. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so for the most part. We talked about that a little bit today when we were sitting there by the fire, but no, I would agree with that for the most part.
They may not all, when you become a connoisseur, a beagle connoisseur, I know there's particular things that you look at. You know, for me, I just look, oh, they're opening, they're driving, they're bringing a rabbit around. That's all good. And I made a few comments, and you're like, oh, I wish they would have done this. Or I wish they, you know, I wish they would have been, you're a connoisseur of beagles. So I think for a guy like me, if I was going to go out and look for a beagle, I'd be pretty happy with a dog that would just bring a rabbit around to the gun.
Yeah. That's really what you need, you know, one that can do that. And if you can find one like that, you should be, you know, that's all you need.
Yeah. Yep, for sure. Well, Alan, I appreciate you inviting me up. I'm not kidding. This has been a pleasurable couple days, and it was well worth the time to come up and not only record a podcast, have you on. How many times you been on the podcast now? You're getting up there and you're getting frequent flyer miles, I think.
I don't know.
Third time?
I think third time, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate it, Chris.
Yep.
No, but really, I appreciate you going. I'm glad you got a chance to go, and it worked out, and worked out for both of us. So I'm glad you had a good time.
I sure did. Well, we'll sign off the podcast. You know how we sign this thing off? I'll embarrass you a little bit. You remember?
You follow your dog, and I'll follow mine.
Oh, man, you almost had it. You almost had it.
Chris, you follow your hound, and I'll follow mine.
There you go. You got it. All right.